Coins Plus in Spokane, Washington. Coins Plus is your full-service rare coin, precious metals broker, dealer, depository service. Been, as usual, doing business about 20-plus years. Christian-owned and operated from the get-go. God actually got me into this business through a series of kind of cool events, and it's just, I think it's something that fits us, fits me incredibly well. I have a pretty strong technical monetary style background, and this just sort of fits right in there pretty well, and so it's a good thing. Coins Plus has been, we've been in this facility about 10 years. It's probably the, I'd say at least, it's one of the nicest facilities nationwide, no doubt, in this industry. We offer one of the highest rated privately held depository services in the Western region and beyond. And the building is built from the ground up with security in mind. It's attractive. It's pleasant. It's comfortable. There's places out there that literally in our business, there's places you go where they got a buzzy in the door. We don't do any of that. We design the business, the building, with the ergonomic logistics built in. And in other words, the security of its, the nature of its security is actually built into the structure itself, and so that not only is it very, very hard to penetrate when it's locked, it's very, words like impossible are really stupid words. So we'll say it's very difficult to rob during store hours for, there's all kinds of pockets and niches. People all over the building have cameras of what's going on in other parts of the building. There's corridors that are, military grade Kevlar walls, bullet and bomb resistant polycarbonate. So there's people stationed throughout the building that can see all the activity in other parts of the building, of the facility, people that are out of sight, out of mind to anybody who comes into the main showroom. There's different aspects of control, and I won't get into all that, but a lot of time, energy, effort, and thought was put into the design to basically provide an extremely secure yet comfortable professional environment. And I think as a Christian, it's really important that we provide that. I think a lot of people lose sight of that as believers. When you look at, like I've mentioned, our, the rotunda of the United States Capitol building, the massive, massive size of the thing, and you go through the Library of Congress and the quality of hand-carved marble and just the exceeding, phenomenal workmanship, to me, that rings true as God's creation. That's what we were here to do. We are, the Bible says, created in his image. And what is ironic is what makes us uniquely like him is actually in the phrase, we are created in his image. It's the fact that we create that makes us uniquely like him. And so, obviously, when someone creates anything, you have good, bad, and indifferent, right? I mean, if someone is a builder and he builds a really ugly house with windows that aren't lined up and they're too small and the house just doesn't have good symmetry, you're not impressed at all. You're like, he's a bad builder, okay? Well, the same goes for us in reflecting God in our lives is we're either good or we're not. We're doing things like he says, do all things as unto the Lord. It says, do it, to the glory of God. We need to do every single thing we do to the best of our abilities to glorify him. If we don't, if we're sloppy, and I've gone through this recently with a really good employee friend that was, just super, super sloppy, detail didn't count, and literally to the point where we're dealing with extraordinary amounts of money in some cases, and just being super sloppy and really inaccurate and not documenting things well. And it's like, that does not glorify God. When he says he is faithful with little, will be given much. We have to prove our faithfulness with a small amount in order to, I think I'm having some technical difficulties going on here, ironically. We have to prove our faithfulness in a small amount. I'm not sure if anybody can hear that. So anyway, now if I just keep repeating myself, that'll somehow make it better, right? Now, we have to prove our faithfulness in a small amount in order for God to give us more. I mean, he's set up those standards. And so we need to just take a lot of pride. I think what I'm just saying is it's so important, and there's a lot of scriptures I can get into pertaining to that, and I won't today, but it's a definite fact. It's something that needs to be considered as a believer. And I apologize, I'm getting some really bizarre feedback here. Okay, so I think I fixed that. And my apologies for my rambling foolishness there. From your end, you're like, what is he talking about? That guy's insane. I have voices in my head, I guess, is kind of what that was for a minute. So let's talk a little bit about what be going on in the world. There are some significant events going on. One thing in particular is the Supreme Court constitutional approval, basically, of President Trump's travel ban. And a lot of people, like I was talking to someone earlier that said, well, yeah, I knew that'd pass. I totally agree. We know that would pass. However, you have to understand the obstructionist nature of what's going on in this nation. The left, the socialists, the Democrats, the Marxists, this is what they are. The fascists, whatever you want to call them, the progressives. They know, I hope, maybe they don't. They have to know that it is the president's constitutional duty to protect our borders and control who comes and who does not. And when they go and they judge shop and they pick radical left-wing judges to stand in the way of Trump's executive orders, attempting to control who enters and who exits this nation, knowing farewell that he has every right to do so, and yet doing it just for the optics, is such a destructive disrespect of the nation they stand on. Now, think of this. Here's what really goes through my mind that I don't get. So let's say President Trump, being president, he's in charge of the borders, among other things, okay? Let's say he has a hot tip, which I'm sure at the presidential level, it's a lot more profound than that. Let's say he has reliable intel that Somalia or Chad or, you know, wherever it may be, is going to send a group of terrorists. Say that they intercept information that over the next 2 months, they're going to try to infiltrate America with 58 bombers. In other words, suicide terrorists. And Donald Trump gets the intel and he says, I've got to put a ban on all immigration from that nation immediately and indefinitely. Because he's got good intel. But he can't tell us the intel. Then he goes and he places a travel ban, an immigration ban. Really, it's a travel ban because the people aren't necessarily immigrating. He's just preventing them from coming in our nation because we don't know who's who or what's what. So let's say he does that. And then the liberals, the radical socialists, whatever you want to call them, they jump in and they go, oh, that's not fair because that country is primarily Muslim. And Donald Trump said during the election that we should just do a ban on all Muslim nations. And so everything Donald Trump does is because he hates Muslims. And so we've got to block all, you know, anything he does that appears to be anti-Muslim, Islamophobic or whatever. And then they go put an injunction and then some, you know, judge imposes an injunction on the president of the United States. Excuse me, that part blows my mind. And then all of a sudden, there's this window of time, okay, that these people are still allowed to come in while this case sits and waits to be heard by the Supreme Court. Now, you think about what I said. He gets intel. He knows that there is a credible threat from a nation. And the easiest thing to do is to say, I'm going to stop all immigration from this nation until we sort this out. Like I said, immediate, imminent, and indefinite. You know, he's got to do it. And then you get these crazy left-wing and ninth district judges that just, it's all about their politics. It's all about, you know, what they think should be right or feel. And then he gets held up for months until this goes to the court. So those people have an opportunity to migrate here during that window of time that the president's trying to secure the nation, okay? That may sound really far-fetched, but according to a source that I have that is operates from the Pentagon, well, I'll say that I heard from an in-between source between us, that's exactly what happened. That they had intel that certain groups were going to infiltrate us for the expressed purpose of terrorist attacks. He imposed the travel ban, and, you know, on it went, and the politics of it, and the release date had to be the perfect timing so you didn't cause the socialist liberals to have a temper tantrum and all this stuff. So they had to change gears, apparently, and ramp up a whole lot of covert operations to try to root these people out, try to watch for them, literally spy, I assume, on each individual, either, you know, after they migrate or whatever, I don't know. But they have to take a whole nother approach because these radicals hate Donald Trump so bad. Now, I'm not going to sit here and tell you that the guy is the most eloquent man you've ever met. No way. He has a lack of diplomacy. And our founding fathers, in some of my readings, actually warned against choosing a president based on their ability to speak. They warn, you know, or they have recommendations about you know, for president, they say that they recommended a successful military leader or a successful businessman. They had a 5-day process that was to take place rapidly. They said specifically, I wish I had it up right now. I could read it to you. I believe I might have read it in Federalist Paper 68, where they specifically state that it is not a popularity contest. It's not about how good looking they are, especially back then. We didn't have TV back then. John F. Kennedy was the first presidential election that was affected by the man's looks. And in a lot of cases, people, I remember at the time, the different surveys, people who listened on the radio, I don't remember if his first run was against Nixon and then, you know, who knows? I don't remember. I don't remember because I wasn't alive. However, they said that people that listened by radio leaned one way and people that watched on TV leaned another way, that the visual changed it by seeing the person. They said with John F. Kennedy, it was like the first election where the female vote made such an impact because they had such a skewed ratio of approval for John F. Kennedy versus men. They liked his looks. They thought he was a fine-looking young lad or whatever you want to call him. That's not what presidential is, okay? Now we talk about presidential like that's what it means. Like, boy, he doesn't look very presidential today. He's not acting very presidential today. And then he's tweeting. Folks, it's really interesting how we go back, isn't it? I mean, jokingly, as a side note, you know, we go all the way back and we do archaeological digs into Egypt. And what do we find? Hieroglyphs. There's another name for those. Emojis, right? So we start with hieroglyphs. And now being in the information age, we're all the way back to essentially emojis, where a picture means it can mean 1,000 words. We're starting to go all the way back that way. Now, we started with writing, and we go to video text, and we do all this, and what are we doing now? Donald Trump is communicating with the world. How? By writing, okay? We used to have the you know, whatever they call it, the ticker tape, the where you do Morse code, telegraph or whatever, where they'd send the message over the wire. We're back. We're tweeting. And the media cannot stand it. He has direct access to the people. They can't stop him. And we do go back to the fundamental things that work. God made us creatures of language, which is a very interesting concept. If you think of our ability to communicate through language, it is an innate skill. It's been really interesting watching. I have a few grandchildren, but watching my most recent develop, I've gotten to see him a little more regularly, and he's a chatterbox. And just watching his language development, he just babbles and babbles and babbles and babbles. He's about a year, and he's a talker. And just watching that go on. And a good friend of ours, the wife of a bishop in a certain church, said that, you know, and they travel all around the world. And she said the babble of infants is different depending on the language. So we have this ability to learn and adapt to whatever language we're exposed to, which is just profound. I mean, you can get really crazy about it if you have kind of the physics background I do, where, you know, the fact that we inhale air and exhale and we make noises that basically send out waves through the air, which is a fluid. You probably all know if we were in outer space, you couldn't talk because there's no air. There's nothing to carry the signal. So by popping and inhaling and exhaling and moving our mouth in certain patterns, we actually are sending out a whole bunch of different noises and shock waves that go through the air. They move the eardrum of another person, and then that sends a signal to the brain, just like a telegraph, you know, dee, 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 dee. It's actually, we're trained how to receive that information and then how to process it in our brain. One thing, folks, just to go off on left field, because that is my specialty, the human brain is the most incredible organ you can't imagine. It is a blob, okay? I am convinced God made it that way on purpose. We can create fake hearts now, supposedly. We can create joint replacements, and we can do all kinds of things with the human body, right? We can do surgeries and plates and make things heal really great, but we cannot make the brain heal. We really can't do anything with the brain. Our knowledge of the brain is so elementary. It is a gelatinous blob, literally. We don't know anything about it, nor will we ever, in my opinion. It is absolutely so opposite of what we see in the inner workings of a computer, where we have storage capacity. We have microchips, essentially, in our own creations. We have binary gates where things are either they're shut or frozen on a yes or no, an open or closed, one or zero, one or zero, one or zero. And then the series of those ones and zeros stores a certain signal. And people don't realize, ironically, that Tesla showed, when we use the term the cloud, where that term came from was that Nikola Tesla, unbelievable man, did things with electronics that are impossible today. We don't even know how he did some of the stuff he did. Phenomenal things. he had that great big tower. I can't remember the name of it. That they tore down after the huge event in Tunguska, Russia. He told his friends to watch in Siberia that he was going to do something really cool. He said that he could create a death ray, he called it, that would take down every plane on the globe. He did all kinds of things with electricity. So they gave him this great big tower that he wanted. I think Westinghouse paid for it. And until he realized that he wanted to provide free power to everybody in the world. It was called the Wardenclyffe Tower. It was from between like 1901 on up. The thing was very tall. It was massive. It was hundreds and hundreds of feet high. I'm not sure how high, but it looked like an electrical conductor, and he was doing experiments on it. He told his friends to watch out in Russia, and that very day, the largest explosion ever recorded on Earth took place over Tunguska, took out, you know, literally like 50,000 square miles or some ridiculous thing. I don't remember the numbers exactly. I may have actually got that number wrong. Wouldn't be the first time. But there was no evidence. So it was completely consistent with what Nikola Tesla predicted and planned and told people to watch for. Immediately afterwards, they took down the Wardenclyffe Tower. And Westinghouse backed out, and it did so much destruction. It took out, oh, here it is, 2,000 square kilometers, 770 square miles of forest. It says the cause is yet unknown. No human casualties, because it happened in an area where Tesla knew no one would be. Now they say, I like this, the explosion is generally attributed to the airburst of a meteoroid. It is classified as an impact event. However, there has been no crater or any evidence of any meteors found in the area. So the object is thought to have disintegrated at an altitude of 5 to 10 kilometers rather than to have hit the surface of the Earth. In other words, we can't explain it. We got to call it a meteorite, but we can't explain it. Well, it was Tesla. I mean, he said, I'm going to do it, and he did it. And it's unbelievable. The guy did other things. He would literally take people 18 miles out of town and shove light bulbs in the ground and light them up from an energy source in town. How'd he do it? I don't know. He knew where underground waterways were and somehow used them to carry a current or something. I don't know. He had cars he built that ran on air, the electricity in the air. He was incredibly brilliant. You know, the government, when he died, our government took all of his writings. The Russian government got the remnants from his son. And after that is when we began to see the flying saucers all over with the rapid motion. You know, there's just a lot we learn from the guy. And that's... he was quite the individual, but he gave us such a barrage of information and knowledge, and yet we lost so much of it because we didn't know what to do with it. at the time, and there was greed. You had Edison creating the light bulb, and very monetary hungry guy, very jealous and very destructive, who wanted to destroy Tesla. Tesla was a foolish businessman who did not care about money. He just made a lot of mistakes. He was an absolute idiot savant. He had such phenomenal knowledge and ability. And God puts those people on earth at the perfect time, in the perfect place. And we don't know why. We don't know what we miss or what we don't miss by not paying attention to these people. But there was something very, very special about him. So anyway, on the whole situation, what my point was with Tesla was he is the one that created the concept of the cloud. He taught us that the ionosphere, apparently, this is another thing that I should get a little more accurate. I believe it's the ionosphere that stays static with the Earth based on magnetism, and that the ionospheric cloud is basically an infinite memory chip where you can have the charged molecules of the air store positive or negative, in other words, binary, to the point where we could literally send our information up to the cloud and store all the information on Earth forever in the ionosphere above us in midair. You wouldn't even see it. This stuff is just incredible. That those are little glimpses of God's creation that are just over the top of the magnificence of the Earth He put us here. And when people get in, and I won't go down this rabbit hole too much further, but when people get into the attitude that none of that matters, none of it, we're just robots that are here to accept Christ, to know Christ, to make Him known, and not even enjoy any of the rest of it. People say, oh, it's Satan's domain. It's all bad. We can't worry about the world. We don't even need to take care of it. God's going to sort it all out. We're just going to be raptured away and let Him sort it all out. You know, that's all. I don't even care. People say, I don't even care. It's the rapture's coming. It doesn't even matter to me. Do you really think God would go to the profound significance of filling the seas with the most beautiful fish imaginable for you to not pay attention and not be in awe and not glorify You? Do you think He would create the birds of the air? You know, and just all these things that are just so majestic, and all the physical properties of water, even in the Bible where it says He gave the water boundaries. People don't realize that there's so many atmospheric variables that make water stay as it does. If you've ever messed with acetone, okay, acetone has a drastically different boiling and freezing point, hypothetically, we'll call it a boiling point, than water does. So when you see acetone evaporate before your very eyes fast, quickly, that's because its boiling point is much, much lower than water, okay? God created an atmosphere that would contain water so it wouldn't behave like acetone. Acetone is like the old fingernail polish remover, but it sneaks out of sealed lids. It crawls everywhere. It spills and it goes and it spreads. Water stops. Water has what's called turgor, surface tension, that literally holds it tight into an area. You know, you've seen water, it'll go out a ways and it'll beat up on the edges. It literally holds its own weight. It's like it creates its own pool walls to contain itself. Why is that? How about the fact that God made water the only substance we know of that the ice is lighter than the liquid? Every other substance, when it freezes, the frozen form is heavier than the liquid. Well, if water were like that, ice would go to the bottom of the lakes and there it would lie, wouldn't it? It wouldn't get any more sunlight. And ultimately, over time, all of our bodies of water would freeze up, you know, from the oceans on down. I mean, you can keep going like this. That God wants you to pay attention to his magnificent creation and glorify him. Some people find, they say, oh, I feel closest to God when I'm in the mountains. Okay, well, what they really mean is they feel peace and in harmony with nature, but you're no closer to God in the mountains. You may be able to get all the civilization noise out of your head or whatever, but we're closest to God when we get down on our knees and yield and submit to him. And just like everything else, it takes years of practice and years of experience to learn who he is and what he does and why he does what he does. And we still never know a lot of it, but we do learn the character of God. We learn that he's a good God. He's a just God, but he's also a very faithful and good God. And I think sometimes we can get focused on his wrath and the fact that, you know, he's God. He does what he wants. So many times, folks, things seem so bad. And we just are like, Lord, where in the world are you? I was listening to a guy speak about one of the a massive church that he built that his church ended up having. And years earlier, he'd had a really unfortunate legal situation that about took him out, just brutal. And he was stuck in this mess for a long time, and he ended up working with this attorney for a long time, a Christian guy. He got to know the attorney really well. But it was tough. It was bad. It was just one of the most trying times of his life. And God was faithful and eventually delivered him from it. And years later, a contractor came up to him after church and said, hey, this is in Texas, said, hey, we've got, believe it or not, we're, you know, doing some deal, and we've got a live television tower available that we can sell you for, you know, a fair price. And the pastor of the church said, you know, we're really not into that at all. They'd never done anything like that. And the guy said, well, think about it. And he says, I will. So the pastor called this attorney who he'd met through very dire circumstances that seemed really difficult. And the attorney happened to know quite a bit about this business, about TV towers or whatever they call them, power stations, I don't know. And the attorney looked the deal over. He evaluated everything properly. He structured some stuff and said, this is a really good deal. You should take it. This is a great opportunity. The price is just super right. And so they put together a deal and bought it for the church. The church grew. They began, you know, they were on TV. They started to get really good exposure that way. And they grew and grew and grew, and they outgrew their building. And then in Houston, they had what's called the Compact Center. Compact Computers, you know, was the name on it. It was a huge sports arena stadium come available, and the church wanted to, they started considering buying it, and it was $100 million to renovate. And the city council, everybody, they had incredible resistance from the city. And one of the big things the city said is, you guys don't even have the money to remodel the thing, which will be $100 million to turn it into a church. Well, they said, yeah, he's right. Or, yeah, they're right. And they prayed, and then the pastor thought, I wonder what that TV tower's worth, you know? So they went and checked it out. Well, apparently that thing had gone up from, they paid like $750,000, had gone up to be worth $75 million. So they, you know, basically set up a structure where they sold that, and that provided most of the funding to refinish this church and do all these things. And now that, you know, Joel Osteen's church operates out of the biggest facility in the United States. It's very upbeat, very positive, very grace and blessing oriented and whatnot. But the point is, the fact that he went through that terribly difficult time that led him to that attorney that just happened to know about TV stations, that approved the TV station and convinced him to buy something he'd never thought about before, and that led to provide the capital to refurbish a building, a massive sporting arena that they otherwise never could have touched with a 10-foot pole, in that case with a 5 or 10-mile pole, etc. This is how God works. He puts us through trials and tribulations. That's why we got to hang on. So sometimes when God seems really unjust or we see evil in the world, that's the thing, is we see evil. God, why are you letting evil prevail? You know, I want to serve you, Lord. It doesn't make sense. Well, God's ways are way bigger than our ways, way bigger. And man, when you're in the middle of that pressure, it's tough, isn't it? I mean, it really, to be honest, it really is tough. Couple things I think in the news worth discussing. Obviously, like I said, the Supreme Court upheld Donald Trump's travel ban. And of course, you hear nothing out of the media, and we just move on our way. And, you know, that is in the enumerated powers of the President of the United States. And that's what he's supposed to be able to do without any hindrance from other branches of government. So the other thing that I see occurring that I think is profound is Donald Trump letting Israel be the capital. How about that? Jerusalem serve as the capital of Israel and our location of the U.S. Embassy. This is very significant. You have got a long, long, long war that has gone on there indefinitely from, let's just say, many, many moons ago. How about that? Interestingly enough, as something a relative of mine sent me today, I got to pull it up on my phone. So you get Donald Trump, who basically approves the Jerusalem to be the capital of Israel. And then you get a headline from brain, go away. Here we go. CNN. The headline says this. I love this. Breaking news. This is right on TV. It says, Abbas, the guy's name is A-B-B-A-S, he's probably some Arab Muslim guy. Trump's move will lead us into wars that will never end. Okay? Think about that. Trump, what Trump's doing with Israel is going to create an endless holy war. Wait a minute. I thought we're already in an endless holy war over there. Isn't that how we got in there in the first place? Yeah, I think it is. So it's so crazy how the left just opposes anything the right does. One thing that's been interesting about this move by Trump is the amount of support he's gotten from the left. And the reason for that is they're pro-Israel. Okay, there's probably a lot of people that are Jewish, they're just pro-Israel. And so there's some ironic levels of harmony on this decision that's transcends politics in quite a considerable fashion. But it's the right thing to do. The biggest issue is this peace thing. They're like, well, maybe it'll help with peace. And Trump says he's still interested in peace. And, you know, everybody's got their spin. And mine is that the Palestinians, which is a name given to them by Yasser Arafat when he started the PLO, the Palestinian Liberation Organization of Radical Terrorists. It started under Yasser Arafat. These men were heinous. They would literally chain people in four limbs with four vehicles and drive off and dismember people. And I'm sorry to gross you out, but I just want you to understand this radical, disgusting terrorism that we're seeing with an absolute disdain for all human life is nothing new. This is their method of operation. it is the way of the devil. I mean, it really, truly is the way of the devil. It is the devil's way. And there is some scriptural warnings against it that I've read. Let me see if I can find some that are, you know, I'm not going to get too deep into this because the theology of this is something I haven't quite studied up on. But this does go all the way back to Jacob and Esau, okay? And, you know, the... Anyway, I don't think I'm going to take on that topic today. But there are so many ongoing prophecies, ongoing struggles, ongoing battles between the descendants of Jacob and Esau. What's really interesting, when you call yourself a Jew, it's, you know, the tribe of Judah or whatever. There's verses like Revelation 2:9. I've heard people that are anti-Jewish, anti-Semitic, try to use Revelation 2:9. And I think 3:9, where it says, I know your tribulation and your poverty, but you are rich. And the blasphemy by those who say they are Jews and are not, but are a synagogue of Satan. Okay? Now, in modern times, if Revelation happened to be relatively accurate to the times, what religion seems to be the synagogue of Satan? So then there's in 3:9, I think it says, Behold, I will cause those of the synagogue of Satan who say that they are Jews and are not, but lie. I will make them come and bow down at your feet and make them know that I have loved you because you've kept my word of perseverance. I also keep you from the hour of testing, that hour which is about to come upon the whole world to test those who dwell on the earth. And then he goes on, I'm coming quickly. Hold fast what you have so that no one will take your crown. I read way past what I intended to. But 3:9, Behold, I will cause those of the synagogue of Satan who say they are Jews and are not, but lie. I'll make them come and bow down at your feet and make them know that I've loved you. Now, there's the anti-Semitic people use this scripture because it uses the term Jew. And they say, see, the Jews are the synagogue of Satan. No, they're not. God said that he will redeem them, that all Israel shall be saved. What I read into this script, these scriptures, is we see the word Jew and we're like, oh, those are the Jews. But really, what the word means in, wow, that's a long scripture. I'm hitting it in the Greek here. Here we go, Jews. It's, I know what it is, but I want to make sure I pronounce it right. It actually starts with an L. It's spelled like Laudeos, but it's actually pronounced Eudeos, Eudeos, Eudeos. And what it means is belonging to the Jewish nation as respects to birth, origin, and religion, belonging to Judea, Yehuda. Okay? So what's going on here is it's not talking to the Jewish race of Israel as we know it. It's talking to people that claim to be of the lineage but are not. Okay? What do we know in modern society that fits that frame? The Islamic movement. Jacob versus Esau. Now, I'm not going to tell you Jacob versus Esau is not a weird scripture. I mean, you know, you've got Jacob versus Esau struggling all the way from the time they leave the womb. And, you know, Jacob ends up getting Esau's birthright over food. And the mother helps Jacob succeed over Esau. And then later on, Esau forgives him while Jacob runs. Well, while Jacob's running from Esau, for his life, he comes across a place called the Dome of the Rock, okay? So let's look at Genesis 28:10 on and find out how in the world did Jerusalem become such a profound location on earth that the entire religion of the world stems around this singular location. So in Genesis 2:28-10, it says, then Jacob, okay, by the way, the name Jacob means deceiver, which is why later God changed it to Israel. Then Jacob departed from Beersheba and went toward Haran. He came to a certain place and spent the night there because the sun had set, and he took one of the stones of the place and put it under his head and lay down in that place. That sounds like a really comfortable pillow to me, a rock. He had a dream, and behold, a ladder was set on the earth with its top reaching to heaven, and behold, the angels of God were ascending and descending on it. And behold, the Lord stood above it and said, I am the Lord, the God of your father, Abraham, and the God of Isaac, the land on which you lie. I will give it to you and to your descendants. So he basically gives him this dream, and then he says, he stood above him and said, I'm the Lord, the God of your father, Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. Well, the Islamists or Muslims, they claim the same lineage, don't they? And the Bible talks about the synagogue of Satan. And you look at their behavior, it certainly isn't, you know, one who came that we may have life and have it abundantly, is it? I mean, they burn people in mass. They bury them alive. They drown them in cages. I mean, they do things to God's creation that are, it's the most inhumane, sick, satanic filth you can imagine, right? So he says, I'm the Lord your God of your father, Abraham and the God of Isaac, the land on which you lie. I will give it to you and your descendants. So he's giving it to Jacob. Your descendants will also be like the dust of the earth, and you will spread out to the west and to the east and to the north and to the south, and you and your descendants shall all, and you and in you and in your descendants shall all the families of the earth be blessed. So through Jacob, all the families of earth will be blessed. Why? Eventually through Christ, through the redemption of God, through the knowledge of God, through the law, through rules and regs, because otherwise humans go off the rails, don't they? Behold, I am with you and will keep you wherever you go. He says to Jacob, I'm with you wherever you go. You've got my blessing forever. And I'll bring you back to this land, for I will not leave you until I have done what I promised you. So God makes a covenant that he's going to take care of him, protect him, bless him. The world's going to be blessed. He's going to bring him back here. He says, then Jacob awoke from his deep sleep and said, I added the word deep. I like to be accurate in my scripture readings. My apologies. Then Jacob awoke from his sleep and said, surely the Lord is in this place, and I did not know it. He was afraid and said, how awesome is this place? This is none other than the house of God, and this is the gate of heaven. Thus Jacob's ladder. This is where angels ascend and descend from heaven. This is a spiritual portal. It later becomes the Dome of the Rock. Many, you know, the Muslims believe, maybe the Jews believe, this is also the location where God, where Abraham brought Isaac to slay him, and God intervened and stopped it. They believe that was literally on the Dome of the Rock, which is now covered up. That's another story. And then it goes on, and it talks about Jacob rose early in the morning. He took the stone, he put it under his head and set it up as a pillar and poured oil on it. He called the name of the place Bethel. However, previously the name of the city had been Luz, and on it goes. So he said, he made a vow saying, if God will be with me and will keep me on this journey that I take and will give me food to eat and garments to wear, and I return to my father's house in safety, then the Lord will be my God. This stone, which I've set as a pillar, will be God's house, and all that you give me, I will surely give a tenth to you. A tenth. So the tithe is established. The God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob is established. Some kind of a spiritual portal is established. There is profound meaning to this, folks. There is profound meaning to that place. It is deeded to Jacob, who later became Israel. It is deeded to him. That's why when I get into the Revelation stuff where it's talking about the synagogue of Satan, people who claim to be Jews, and people go, well, the Muslims don't claim to be Jews. No, they claim to be of the lineage of Judea, of Judah. And that's profound. I mean, this is the constant struggle. It's Jacob versus Esau. And it's never ending. So when CNN says, oh no, Trump's, you know, calling the capital of Israel, Jerusalem, he's going to create a never-ending holy war. No, that's not the case. But I will tell you, well, it's not the case because it's already under existence. This land in Israel, I don't know how many of you have been there. I assume quite a few. It's a sliver. It is a tiny part of the world, of the globe. It's so irrelevant, but God made it in such a way, it's had incredible prosperity, phenomenal number of water springs. It has a valley, which we know of as the city of Megiddo, Armageddon. What's so profound about it? What's so profound about this valley is no matter how far away you come, there's only one passageway to where you can get in and out of this valley. And that passageway is in the Valley of Megiddo, where Armageddon will once take place. It's the ultimate battlefield. Supposedly, according to military officials, the best designed battlefield on planet Earth. And it's where God tells us there's going to be some bloodshed there, folks. Some deep, nasty bloodshed. I hate to admit it, but it's true. And so Donald Trump's honoring God's word. He's doing God's good. He's doing God's bidding. Yes, Donald Trump is not the most diplomatic individual you'll ever meet. He's got his own reasoning for what he does. We can't speak for that. He's never going to be a good diplomat. He's just not. It's not in his makeup. It's not his gig. But he will be, he is a powerful leader. He leads by example. He never quits. He never stops trying. And he's doing something that many presidents have cowered away from. And the left is going crazy over this. They're pro-Palestine. Anti-Jew. The Jews woke up one day for the Six-Day War in 67, I think it was. Put up a fight. A miraculous fight. All these other nations were coming after him to destroy him. They miraculously were victorious over all of them. They confiscated some of the land that the people had attacked them from. And we've been bickering over it all ever since. And if they give that land up in peace treaties in a lot of ways, the Muslims don't just want the land. They want to completely cripple and abolish the Jews. They don't believe that the Bible's written the way that we believe it's written to the Jews, to the real descendants of Judea. And so it just never ends, and they become more heinous and evil and victim oriented and not, you know the whole deal. So this is the most holy ground on earth. And God said, basically, I won't look away from this place as long as your nation exists. I will look over you. Now, of course, after that, there's some profound things that happened. They went into captivity in Egypt. There's some very profound events that took place that would appear that God had abandoned them, but they abandoned God. And that's what's important to understand in our lives. When you know, I'm not saying walking with God's a cakewalk. You're going to have some of the longest, hardest, toughest times of your life. And you're going to have times when everything's going wrong, and at least according to our will and our standards. And there's people that have all kinds of free advice for that. And all I can say to that is a lot of those people have never been in other people's situations where they have, you know, if you're faithful with little, God will give you much. But as he gives you, you know, to him who much is given, much is required. And as you're given more and more responsibility, that it's the key word, responsibility. People don't realize wealth comes, real wealth comes with responsibilities. It comes with a lot more obligation, a lot more, you know, responsibility for decision making and whatnot. So it's important to understand that and realize that we can't live with the zero sum thinking that those who have are somehow evil and, you know, and those who have not are somehow good. So that's it for the day overall. Just briefly, you know, we talk regularly about building portfolios. We do it. It's our business. I think we're good at it. Stock market's going crazy. People are asking about Bitcoin. It's through the roof. These are massive frenzies, just insane frenzies, folks. Bitcoin's the craziest thing I've ever seen. It's so out of control. The stuff's $12,000 a share. I had it a few years back at $18 a share. And I sat on it for a year, and I think it went up to $20-some dollars a share in a year, okay? When something does this, it's not good. It will come down. So just, you know, be wise. I'll keep it simple. I'm out of time as usual. Do what's right. Keep it simple. Do the right thing. Obey God's word. Buy assets. Be patient. Don't do a get-rich-quick scheme. Give us a call. The phone number's coming up. Thanks for tuning in. Take care. God bless. Bye-bye.